Proverbs 23. We are working on the rest of Proverbs here. And we're in this section, which is a little different than the Proverbs section from 10 to the middle of 22, where pretty much every verse is a unique proverb. Here you've got little chunks of Proverbs. Some of them are one verse, but some of them are a little longer section, so we can kind of reflect on them just a little bit more. And so we're just going through them one at a time, kind of looking at them, thinking about the pearls of wisdom that they represent. Think about Proverbs 23:17. I believe that's where we'd stop. So look at verse 17. Do not let your heart envy sinners, but live in the fear of the Lord always. Surely there is a future, and your hope will not be cut off. Now, why would there be a temptation to envy sinners? Well, because sometimes it seems like the unrighteous people are better off than the righteous ones in this life, right? Are there ever any times that they seem to prosper more, be healthier, you know, things seem to go better for them, they don't have as many problems and crises? You can be envious of them. But what we need to do instead is to fear the Lord and live focused on Him and His objectives, because there is a future. You know, we so often are thinking about today and tomorrow maybe, and that's it. But if you look forward to the future, there's an eternal hope for the people of God that you just don't have if you're a wicked person. So, you know, just because things might temporarily seem to be going better for the wicked, if you look toward the future, it's way better to fear the Lord and let Him be your focus and not be envious of the wicked people and how well they seem to have it. Now look at 19. Listen, my son, and be wise, and direct your heart in the way. Do not be with heavy drinkers of wine, or with gluttonous eaters of meat. For the heavy drinker and the glutton will come to poverty, and drowsiness will clothe one with rags. Now, what do alcohol and gluttony have in common? Well, they're expensive, they're debilitating, and they really represent the idea of people who have no discipline. They just give themselves to what they feel at the moment. Now, if you hang out a lot with undisciplined people, what will probably happen to you? We usually are influenced more than we influence. You know, the danger is that we sort of pick up the habits and the mindset of the people who just give themselves to doing whatever they feel like, whatever they think is going to satisfy their desires at the moment. So he's warning his son, be careful not to spend too much time with people who drink and are gluttonous, because they're going to come to poverty. If you're not careful, you'll have the same philosophy because of your association, and you'll come to poverty too. I think that's the idea. We warn our children about things like that, right? You know, watch who you hang out with, watch who your best friends are, you know, because it's easy to get sucked into the same way of life and way of thinking that they do. So this is Solomon's approach to that here as he talks to his son. Then look at verse 22. Listen to your father who begot you, and do not despise your mother when she is old. Buy truth and do not sell it. Get wisdom and instruction and understanding. Now, he's encouraging his children to listen to their parents. Now, why would that be? What would the advantage be of listening to your father and mother? Well, the idea he's presenting here is they've got more wisdom, more than likely, because they've had more experiences. You know, if you want to learn how to do something, would you go to somebody who's never done it before? Or would you go to somebody who's done it a lot and knows a lot about it? Well, in life, are you more likely to know more about it when you've really experienced very little of it? but when you've been through a lot of it. Now, that's not to say that every single parent is wise, and I know there are people whose parents are not Christians and are really not good people. We're assuming here we're looking at parents who are godly people. If you don't have a parent like that, then think about other wise older people that are Christians that you know. But the idea is you want the truth and you want wisdom. And no price is too high, no sacrifice is too great for getting wisdom. Isn't that what he's saying in verse 23? Buy it and don't sell it. Don't sell it for anything. It's worth more than anything you could pay for it. Because the life of wisdom is a better life. So get wisdom at all costs. You think about people who've given up a lot to follow the ways of wisdom. Think about Moses and all he gave up, right? And Paul and all he gave up, and so forth. And it's because they wanted to follow God and follow his way of wisdom. And ultimately, where do we find wisdom? In the Word. So we ought to be spending a lot of time in the Word and a lot of time listening to the people who spend a lot of time in the Word so that we can learn the wisdom. It's going to be so much better for us. How many times in your life already, even if you're a young person, have you done something and thought, I wish I had known better? I wish I'd thought about it? I wish I'd have thought about what God wanted? Because it doesn't work very well when you don't do things God's way. And so, go with the way of wisdom. Now, he continues in 24 and says, the father of the righteous will greatly rejoice, and he who sires a wise son will be glad in him. Let your father and your mother be glad, and let her rejoice who gave birth to you. Your parents are going to be a lot happier if you're wise children. So make them happy by being wise. That's really what he's saying. Wisdom is such a key element, and your parents' happiness when you follow the way of wisdom. So, get wisdom. Then 26. Give me your heart, my son. Let your wise delight in my ways, for a harlot is a deep pit, and an adulterous woman is a narrow well. Surely she lurks as a robber and increases the faithless among men. We're back to that again. Remember, if you've studied Proverbs all the way through, Solomon warned his son a lot about the immoral woman in those first several chapters, but he's back to that subject again. She ambushes young people a lot of times and traps them in a narrow pit they can't get out of. You can't climb out a lot of times once you fall in it. So get away from women who would try to bring you down. Immoral women who lead their victims to be faithless to God and their spouse and even themselves. There is such terrible things with immorality. And sexual immorality, sexual impurity, just destroys our character, it destroys our honesty, it destroys our relationship with God, it destroys our families. And so one of the best pieces of advice you could give anybody, but here thinking about our children, stay away from immoral relationships. Don't be with the women who would be willing to involve themselves in an immoral relationship. Get away from those people. And again, if you remember from early Proverbs, those things don't start so sinister. They start with conversation, and you're just kind of developing a friendship. You start talking to each other a little more, opening up to each other a little bit more, sending messages to each other a little bit more, getting a little bit closer, feeling encouraged by the relationship, opening up more, feeling a greater sense of attachment, you know, helping each other feel better about themselves when their spouse is not treating them very well, feeling closer, developing more of an emotional dependence, talking more openly about everything. You know, she feels terrible because her husband hates her, and she feels so ugly and unloved, and he wants to do everything he can to show her how lovely and lovable she is. You see how that just kind of of that scenario just kind of gradually takes you down. It starts with the communication, and you've got to really be careful about that. There are just so many tragic examples of what we would have thought were good people who end up in really bad situations because they let themselves get carried away in a relationship that they should have never begun. They didn't begin it to be immoral, but they began it unwisely because it wasn't a relationship they were entitled to. So if I'm going to have a relationship with a woman and much conversation with her, I want Sandra to be a part of that. Or I want her husband to be a part of that. It shouldn't be something where I've got this special communication, this special closeness with somebody I'm not married to of the opposite gender. That's just not appropriate. So he warns his son about that. Then he warns about something else at pretty good length here in 29. Who has woe? Who has sorrow? Who has contentions? Who has complaining? Who has wounds without cause? Who has redness of eyes? Well, somebody I don't want to be like, that's for sure. You want to have all that happen to you? Well, he tells us who has all that. Sounds like a real loser, doesn't it? Those who linger long over wine, those who go to taste mixed wine, do not look on the wine when it is red, when it sparkles in the cup, when it goes down smoothly. At the last, it bites like a serpent, stings like a viper. Your eyes will see strange things. Your mouth will utter perverse things. You will be like one who lies down in the middle of the sea, or like one who lies down on the top of a mast. They struck me, but I did not become ill. They beat me, but I did not know it. When shall I awake? I will seek another drink. Now you understand he's describing the picture of the person who drinks. And it starts so delightfully. That wine looks so beautiful in the glass, and it goes down smooth, and it makes you feel good. You know, Satan packages temptation in ways that are really attractive. You ever seen all the alcohol commercials on TV? How do they look? You know, it's always something very attractive. I mean, it's an outdoor adventure. It's attractive people. It's enjoyable friendships and relationships and all that. That's what the devil sells. But we always have to think about, where does this road take me? And Solomon's very clear about this. You want to have all kinds of problems in your life? I mean, all kinds of problems in your life? Then go the way of alcohol. That'll give it to you. And there's been no change in the last 3,000 years in the result of alcohol abuse. We know that just as well now as Solomon knew it. It's something you want to stay away from and avoid. He talks about lots of different things. He talks about all the fighting you have without a cause. People usually become more aggressive when they're under the influence. And they act in ways that they wouldn't act otherwise. They see strange things. You notice that in 33? You know, kind of hallucinations. You know, you see things you wouldn't normally see when you're drunk. You know, you get a hangover. I think that's the idea of lying down in the midst of the sea. You know, what happens when you lie down in the midst of the sea? You get seasick. What happens when you drink too much? That's not a pretty sight. You know, it's like, you know, there was one time I guess I just ate too many graham crackers. I was about 9 years old, 8 or 9, and it made me sick, and I didn't want graham crackers for a long, long time. I'm okay with them now. I'm 59, so it's been a while. But wow, for a while, I didn't want to see a graham cracker because it made me sick. Maybe I just got sick on my own and it was the graham crackers that I'd eaten last. I don't know. But why do you want to bring those terrible things on yourself? It's not worth it. He describes the idea of getting beat up. And you get over the, you know, the hangover. And when you wake up, what do you want? Another drink. You know, kind of the guy who decides that the best way to get over a hangover is just to drink some more. You know, it's kind of the slavery. It's like, wait a minute. This is not giving you what you want and you still drink more. But you know the enslaving quality of substance abuse. It gets to the point where you just become a total slave. You even don't want it, you don't like it, but you keep going back to it. Now, what's the best way to deal with that? You know, think about where I'm at and where many of you are probably at, especially younger ones. My family did not drink. I learned early on that it was bad. I saw a little bit of that in looking around and seeing people who abused alcohol. So I decided, what's the use? I don't want it. I smelled a little bit of it a couple of times, and it smelled horrible. So I just never drank anything. I've just never done it. You know, I don't think it's hurt me in any way not to drink. I can't think of anything I've missed out on that would have been good if I had been drinking. So I just avoided it. That's the safest way we can take. It's just don't go there. And it's kind of nice that I can tell people, look, just do what I've done. Just stay away from it. You know? Because it's not tempting to me. I've never felt what it feels like. If it's a good feeling, I don't know it. So it doesn't, I don't miss it. I don't crave it. It's disgusting as far as I'm concerned. That's the best thing we can do. Why go down that path? Especially think about it. Is there a lack of things to drink in our culture? I mean, you know, I went one of those places today where, you know, you got those machines now that you can punch the buttons and you can get any combination of whatever, you know, beverages you want. You know, that's pretty cool. I mean, there are so many different things you can drink. And why would you drink something that would be this, have this many horrible effects? It's like, this is just not smart. So I really appreciate Solomon just laying that out for us. We could probably figure that out on our own if we'd have really looked at people who drink. But here's Bible-inspired words to tell us it's not going to help you. It's going to hurt you. Then look at chapter 24, verse 1. Do not be envious of evil men, nor desire to be with them, for their minds devise violence and their lips talk of trouble. Don't be envious of wicked people. You know, it's just going to get you in trouble. Again, sometimes the wicked people look like they're having the fun. They look like they're the cool ones. But remember where they go. It's not going to be good in the long run. We've always got to think about that. We're always thinking, where does this road lead me? Yeah, it may seem cool right now. But it's not going to lead you to a good place. You can't go a road and not go where it takes you. So we've got to stop and realize, don't envy them. Don't want to be like the wicked. Don't think, oh, I wish I could do those bad things they do. You shouldn't wish that. Because the more you want to do the wrong things people do, the more you're going to go that way because you want to. So we got to quit wanting to. Look at the value of wisdom. Verse 3. By wisdom a house is built, and by understanding it is established. By knowledge the rooms are filled with all precious and pleasant riches. Wisdom will build a house for you, and it will fill you up with riches. If you follow the ways of wisdom, you are more likely to have a stable, prosperous household. Think about it. God made the world by wisdom. So when you follow the ways of wisdom, you're fitting in with the instruction manual. You know, you're following the ways of the person who created things. You know, it always works better if you follow the directions, if you do what the manufacturer recommends. And so we need to follow the way of wisdom, and it will be better for us in the long run. Look at verse 5. A wise man is strong. And a man of knowledge increases power, for by wise guidance you will wage war, and an abundance of counselors there is victory. Brains are better than muscle. You can get more done using your head than using your raw strength. So Think about wisdom as the path to greater strength and greater effectiveness. It'll give you more than anything else will. You know, I remember, I've used these kind of illustrations, but when I first started preaching in 1980, there were three boys in the congregation who were wrestling in high school for Floyd Central. It was a good wrestling team, at least at that point. And the thing I know is I watched a bunch of their matches. The thing that was interesting, it wasn't the strongest boys who won. It was the smartest boys who won. The ones who knew what they were doing, who had the good technique, were better than the guys who had more muscle, but they didn't know how to use it. You know, they get themselves in positions that the strength didn't help them much if the other guy knew the technique. Wisdom is always going to be more valuable than just the bare muscle. So think about the idea of you need wise guidance and abundance of counselors to wage war and gain victory. So often we think we know everything. And I don't need to listen to anybody else, and I don't need to seek anybody else's opinion. I can handle this on my own. How does that usually work out for us? You know, it's a lot better to recognize we don't know a lot, and we need good information from wise people. A wise leader listens to good counsel. He's willing to recognize his limitations, and he surrounds himself with good people who will tell him what he needs to hear and who will be wise about it. You're going to get a lot more done in life if you'll listen to wise counsel. And then look at verse 7. He says, wisdom is too exalted for a fool. He does not open his mouth in the gate. One who plans to do evil, men will call a schemer. The deviser of folly is sin, and the scoffer is an abomination to men. So the fool, he's just out of his element when wise people get together and talk. He's never at a loss for words until the conversation turns serious, and then he has nothing worthwhile to say because he doesn't have any wisdom. You wouldn't think about putting a foolish man in a position of honor or trust. Well, sometimes we do, but we shouldn't think about that. You know, because evil men, foolish men, just ruin things. So if you want prosperity, follow wisdom. If you want strength, follow wisdom. If you want respect, follow wisdom. Now look at verse 10. If you are slack in the day of distress, your strength is limited. Do you understand that the thing that tests our character is adversity? You're not strong until you're strong when it's hard. Difficulty will separate the men from the boys and show whether a man really is strong or not. You know, if you in a crisis are able to stay strong and firm and centered on God, you're strong. If you're just strong when it's easy, well, anybody can do that. So think about adversity, you know, the day of distress, as being the thing that really shows you what kind of a person you really are, what kind of a backbone you have, what kind of relationship with God you have. You know, don't just think about coasting. Prepare for the day of adversity. Again, he says, if you're slack in the day of distress, your strength is limited. You're not really strong if you're not strong when it's hard. Then look what he says in verse 11. Deliver those who are being taken away to death, and those who are staggering to slaughter will hold them back. If you say, see, we did not know this, does he not consider it who weighs the hearts? And does he not know it who keeps your soul? And will he not render to man according to his work? Now, I think what he's saying here is, you need to rescue the guy who's dying. You need to step up when somebody's being oppressed and mistreated and help them. Deliver those who are being taken away to death. Those who are staggering to slaughter, or hold them back. Don't you say, see, we didn't know it. We didn't know anything about it. Because that's a cop-out, and God knows. When you just don't get involved, because, well, I didn't want to get involved, and you could have done something to help in the situation. Think about Obadiah in the Old Testament, who hid the prophets of God in the caves and provided for them so Jezebel couldn't exterminate them. Think about Jonathan standing up for David and protecting David from his father Saul. Think about Esther, risking her life to go in before the king to ask for the life of her people. Think of the midwives in Egypt who refused to kill the boy babies of the Israelite women. Think about Ebed-Melech, who went to the king and asked for permission to get poor Jeremiah out of the muddy pit that they'd put him in. Think about Aquila and Priscilla risking their lives to save Paul's neck in Romans 16. A courageous person is willing to say, hey, wait a minute, this is not right. Willing to stand up when people are being oppressed and hurt and killed. Now, you can see the gallantry in that, can't you? That it's better to get involved and help than to say, well, it's none of my business. I'm not going to help because I don't want to have to face difficulty. Cowardice in the face of injustice is bad. But now, if that's true in the physical realm, you know, if you see somebody getting beat up, intervene. You call the police or do whatever you need to do to help that situation. But what if we're seeing people lost spiritually? We see people who are going to get a lot worse than being hurt and oppressed in this life. Don't we have a responsibility to reach out to them with the gospel? I think we've just really gotten too comfortable with not speaking about the Lord like we ought to, with not caring about people who are lost. They're all around us. We can't make them saved, but we can sure offer opportunities for them to learn, and we can encourage them to turn to Jesus. If we're not doing that, we're seeing these people who are being taken away to death and just kind of closing our eyes and say we don't know anything about it. That ought to be convicting to all of us. Then he says in verse 13, my son, eat honey, for it is good. Yes, the honey from the comb is sweet to your taste. Know that wisdom is thus for your soul. If you find it, then there will be a future and your hope will not be cut off. All right, so how do you like honey? You know, and other sweet things. Pretty good, right? Now, there's a few people who don't like sweet things. I don't know what's wrong with them. But normally, we find honey to be, you know, delicious. He says, you ought to find wisdom to be just as delicious as honey. Just like honey is to the taste, wisdom is to the soul. You know, it's just as delightful and refreshing. So you ought to pursue wisdom. If you make me a good dessert, I will work hard to get some of it and enjoy it. And, you know, we understand that. Our palate is pleased by honey. But we ought to have that craving in our soul for God's wisdom where we really want it. We long for it. We're just poring over the Bible a lot because we want as much wisdom we can get. And we're trying to listen to people who will teach us wisdom. That's the thing to pursue. We get all pursuing all kinds of stuff. Have you noticed that? I mean, we pursue hobbies, we pursue, you know, wealth building, we pursue sports, we pursue friendships, you know, we pursue video games. You know, there's all kinds of stuff that we're really interested in. But none of those things is really nearly as valuable as the Lord. It's like we sometimes get our values all out of whack. You know, shouldn't the Lord mean a whole lot more to us than all those things put together? Because they're all going to be gone. The Lord's the only thing that lasts. And then look at verse 15. Do not lie in wait, O wicked man, against the dwelling of the righteous. Do not destroy his resting place. For a righteous man falls seven times and rises again. But the wicked stumble in time of calamity. He's warning the wicked man, don't try to bring about the downfall of the righteous man's house. It'll be a waste of time. God will bring him back up seven times. You know, you can punch him down, he'll be right back up. Because God won't let the wicked destroy the righteous. This is one of the few times in Proverbs where he addresses the fool directly and just said, this is a waste of time. You know, don't go there. So, you know, when we're looking at these Proverbs, you know, one of the things that we need to think about is that almost all of these are Proverbs that you could chew on for a long time. You could think about it. You could see how they apply in different ways. It's one of those things that you kind of talk through several of these And it's like you hate to talk about another one because you're diminishing the effect of the last one. So I really think Proverbs is one of those books that will really pay us to really, you know, chew on. Take a proverb or two and think about them for a while. You know, think about what they mean in your life. Think about how you could apply those in different situations. Once you get on to reading them and thinking about them, they're not that hard to understand. You can work through them. And hopefully this gives a little bit of guidance and makes you think about them a little bit. And the goal would be that you just take off from there and you keep reading them and meditating on them and trying to learn them. We'll stop here and we'll pick up in 17 in a couple weeks when we have a Sunday night sermon again. And so the rest of chapter 24 are these little groupings of Proverbs. And then we go chapter 25 to 29 is another set of more random Proverbs, but they're not so much like the ones we've had before. They're pretty different in their style. So we've got a lot of good things to continue looking at in Proverbs. I think it's very helpful for us. We need the wisdom. Let's apply ourselves to get it. If you're not a Christian, you need to follow God's wisdom. We encourage you to come tonight while we stand and sing.